You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hi, queers. Welcome to the final episode of season 2.
And we saved a legend for last.
Today we talk to advocate, organizer, and storyteller Cecilia Gentile.
Pieces on Joan is a podcast dedicated to amplifying voices from the LGBTQ plus community in the New York performing arts scene and examining the industry from a queer perspective. Join us as we sit down with groundbreaking theater folk, from Brooklyn cabaret performers to people backstage and on Broadway.
For many queers, theater has been an escape. This podcast looks to have open conversations on where we've come from and where we're heading as a community while queering the canon along the way. Hi, Holly.
Hello. Last episode for a minute.
I know. And like, it's almost the end of 2021, which is very strange.
Yeah. I don't even know where this year went.
No, it was as speedy as last year was long. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're recording this in like mid-November. It's coming out beginning of December. Whether we like it or not, people are already telling us the holidays are coming.
I feel like Halloween is kind of the start of the holidays for me. Like, I'm like, mm-hmm. Oh, great. They are here. They've arrived.
They've arrived. Halloween is ushering them in. Yeah, that's true. I feel like I need to look at it that way. But I feel like every year we're starting to get more and more like, here's a queer holiday movie, or here's a queer, like, for better or worse, right? Mm-hmm. Is there a holiday, and take this as broad as you want to, holiday tradition or like artistic piece that you would like to queer or see queered?
Oh, wait, what do you mean artistic piece? Like,
yeah, that was broad too. Like a movie.
Like a holiday song. Artistic piece. I see. Mm-hmm. I mean, Halloween is probably my favorite holiday. Also why I get excited for that. So, I love any like queer Halloween stories. I have recently become more into horror, scary movies because my partner loves them and she makes me watch them. And so now like my tolerance has definitely built up. Because I remember like one of the first scary movies I saw in college was this like French horror film called, I don't remember what it was called. It was a French horror film, and we were watching it with a group of my friends, and my friend was like, Holly, you're going to love it. It's gay. And they're lesbians. And I'm like, done. I'm in. Flash forward to me like hiding under a blanket and then crying halfway through the movie because I was so scared. Mm-mm. And my friend was like, do you want to leave and go back to your dorm? And I'm like, yeah. but I kind of want to watch it now because I feel like I could handle it now. But yeah, it was a really intense movie. I wouldn't recommend to start with that. But yeah, if we could get more queer Halloween stories, I would love that.
Queer horror just works so well, I feel like, too.
Yeah, you know? But not in a tropey way. Like, I want someone to the horror is, like, heteronormativity or, you know.
Right. yeah. I'll just, like, put the queers in it to kill them kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
What was the name of that movie?
It was, it's called High Tension. And it does live up to its name. And there, spoiler alert, there's a dog that dies. So.
No.
You don't have to. Does the dog die?
That's important. Yeah.
That was, I think, the first time I cried was when the dog died.
I think for me, like, for the holidays, just like we could do more like queering the idea of gathering around the holidays. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm like so pumped to be here for Thanksgiving this year. We get to hang out together. And I was talking to my friend today who has always been in the city. And he's like, yeah, staying in the city for Thanksgiving is the best because you just get to go to all your friends' house and hang out with the people you don't have time to see. And I was like, yeah, that's what holidays are supposed to be about rather than like stressing yourself out about getting to a place that you're supposed to be, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think for the holidays, like queering the idea of gathering and the idea of who we, air quotes, should be gathering with and spending time with, is interesting to me. So
yeah, I can't believe that you like traveling for Thanksgiving is the norm for you because yeah, I did that like twice and like, oh no, never again. Yeah, I also think about that too, as like someone who I'm not sure if I'm going to have kids or not, like what that will look like, you know, when my parents pass on, like what the holidays will be, if it's just like me and my partner or like, I, you know, will it be hanging out with our other queer friends who also don't have kids or like going to their or friends who do have kids and hanging out with them? Like, what is that mm-hmm. going to look like? You know, my family is pretty small and that, but Lucy's family is huge. So we'll see. But yeah, just like right. queering what family is and gatherings. It's so true.
Yeah. It's like, I feel like there's a lot of the norm is to think of like, well, you'll make your own traditions, like with your partner or with like your, what is traditionally thought of as a nuclear family. But mm-hmm. I feel like the past year and a half or so has taught us like, you already have your family. Like, just make your traditions now with the people who are already your chosen family. Mm-hmm. And I know this isn't news to a lot of people, but it's like a new thing for me to think about. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Well, I'm excited to celebrate some of the upcoming holidays with you. And that'll be a nice, fun new tradition.
Yeah. It's going to be great. I'm excited for mac and cheese.
Yeah, I bought all the ingredients yesterday. I'm excited.
Great.
And 24 Hawaiian rolls.
Hell yeah. That's great. Oh, I love Hawaiian rolls so much. They're so good.
They're amazing. So we had the pleasure to see just yesterday Luciana Goss, which is by one of our former guests, Javier Rivera de Bruin, and produced by also a former guest, National Queer Theater mm-hmm. folks. It's directed by Carlos Armesto and it's at the 14th Street Y. Unfortunately, when this podcast comes out, it will have ended on November 30th, but I'm so glad we got to go see this show together.
Yeah, it was what a cool space too. I've never been to 14th Street Y and I know they do a ton of off stuff. So, I know I said this to you when we walked in, Holly, but I'm like, oh my gosh, like a production.
Yeah.
Like it's a set. There's costumes. There's like, it was so thrilling to just see like a show that had a set. That sounds mm-hmm. so basic, but it was really cool to just walk into a new space and be like, oh, there's a lot to discover here before the show even starts, you know?
Yeah. I think what struck me was like, I'm like, oh, this is like a human body in space right next to me. Like I can hear their breathing and I can hear like their footsteps on the floor and like you don't mm-hmm. get that in like Broadway productions really, or like watching TV or recorded production. Like it just like all the noises that humans make, I'm like, oh, it's there. It's right here.
Yeah.
That felt really striking.
Very close to the performers. So it was like, I don't know. I was aware of like how they were aware of our bodies in the space too, mm-hmm. which is like so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was so cool to see Javier's work like in person after reading some of their work. And mm-hmm. Like, I feel like Javier has such like a very amazing, vivid, magical realism imagination. So to be able to like see that off the page was like thrilling.
Definitely. Yeah. And they have so many themes of like family and generational drama and trauma and love. And, I just love all the themes that they're working with. And just really like sympathetic for all of their characters. Like, you know, I guess we can talk spoilers, but like, I just found the middle mom so sympathetic and relatable. Like, she had to make really hard choices about her keeping her family or choosing her art because our industry isn't set up to support families and especially like single parents. So she was put in a really tough position that like, you know, a lot of folks have to make, if they can pursue the arts or not.
It was really just like, here is the issue that this character is up against. There was no like vilifying the choice that she made. It was just like, isn't this shitty that this is what people have to decide between?
Yeah. And I could see like, but I also can like see it from their perspective of like her daughter or her child and the mother of like, oh, this is such a selfish choice. Like, how could you make this? And, you know, like you can't come back to your family.
Yeah. It was a great cast. I was like very, I thought everyone was like, so the roles felt very lived in for such a short run production. Like, I think we saw it on its second week and it was like, oh, it feels like these people have been inhabiting these characters for forever. And I have to say it. I know that we were both like, love Javier's ongoing trope of a kind of wacky old white man coming to dinner. It's so great. In both of the plays that we've experienced by them, it's like there's always some random old white dude like coming into the picture. So
yeah. It's so interesting to see though, and just like how out of place like a cis straight white man is in that world and like good. Like I like wanted him to feel so uncomfortable and, you know, have to deal with his privilege and confronting like the issues that this family was facing.
And I feel like because we're seeing this as an audience for National Queer Theater, I mean, I am also a white cis woman, right? So I feel like there are ways that I align with that character more, but being in an audience that is presumably mostly queer or, you know, some sort of identity that is not cis white men, is you are kind of like laughing at him rather than being like, oh, I feel uncomfortable like this guy, you know, where I feel like if this show was in a certain audience, that character would be a reflection of the audience, but not necessarily in this production, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah. Luciana Gus on Broadway. Everyone's going to be more in the George bucket.
Yep. Everyone's going to be George.
I wouldn't want to see, you know, it with that kind of audience. Like, it's so much better in a small space with, you know, presumably a pretty queer audience.
It was really like unapologetic about, I mean, as it should be, of like not trying to over explain things. You know what I mean? There was a lot of like, kind of like ancestral references and different things that probably have a much more historical significance than we realize, but it wasn't like, let me stop and explain this to y'all.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, here's the world that I've made and, you know, you get to witness it. So good for you kind of thing. So it was great.
Yeah. The one thing I wish that like they could have done, but I understand why they couldn't, was like when they were lighting the fires and like cooking the food, like I wanted, it was such like a sensory heavy play with like all the food. They made so many meals like on stage and like lit a bunch of fires. And I just like wanted to be able to smell like all the smells. Cause it made me so hungry already, just like thinking about all the food they were making, but I was like, oh, I want to smell it.
And it was like a cold day yesterday. So like, I feel like we were sitting fire adjacent. We would have been thrilled.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, we could do like, I would love to see like a site specific kind of production of this with like in the woods, in a cabin, real fire.
Yeah. Javier, we will go wherever you put this in a cabin.
Yeah.
Go see it. That would be very cool.
That'd be so fun. I loved so much of like the Mal, the queer character, like needing to get in touch with their like inner child, like inner, I don't know how, you know, Javi would explain it, but like having, like getting in touch with themselves. And I'm like, oh, I see so much of that in myself, like allowing myself to be like silly and playful and, you know, like your inner child. I really love that, that concept, that theme throughout the show too.
And also just like the, that's something I was thinking about. They gave us like that little exit survey, right? And I was like, and like, also just like the queering, it was just not like a colonized view of like the grieving process of like in this play, the grandmother comes back and is in the room as they do like their grieving ritual, which is like, you know, presented kind of, I mean, George is freaked out, but besides that, it's like, this is just how it's happening. You know, this is how we're going to process this, this death experience. And, yeah, there are other ways to experience these life events that aren't necessarily what people would view as like quote unquote typical. So.
Yeah. I appreciate that the mom like didn't go to the funeral and she's like, oh, that's not how I need to grieve my mother. Yeah.
Great show.
Yeah.
Congrats to everyone involved.
And you saw another production that had one of our former guests. Do you want to talk about that for a minute?
I did. And I like didn't even realize it had one of our former guests until like a week out before I saw it. But yeah, I got a chance to see Is This a Room, which again, sadly, by the time this is released, will have ended its Broadway run. It was playing in rep with Dana H. But yeah, it was such a like interesting, like I love that it was on Broadway. I'm shocked that it was on Broadway, right? Because it's a documentary piece of a transcript of an FBI interview, which is super interesting. People should look up kind of how it was made and the origins of the actual piece. But for our purposes, it was very exciting to see Becca Blackwell in the role of unknown male, which first off, incredible that that's the name of the role. But yeah, Becca was, I think this is Becca's Broadway debut, but I'm not 100. I think so.
Yeah, because I remember when they, right, because when they were talking to us about Hurricane Diane, that was like their off-Broadway debut, which also felt wild.
Right, it's shocking because they've been working in the industry for how long, right? Yeah, so what other opportunity would they have had? Broadway just reopened. But it was so great to see them as like the comic relief of this very intense political play. You know, it was like, if like our listeners have seen their work before, it makes sense that they are that the person that was in that role, you know, cause they're like able to like relieve tension in a very like interesting way. And, but yeah, they also were like just very, I was obsessed with their like super butch like FBI look going on. It was so great. I feel like this production will probably have another, like this is already the third mounting of it, you know, and like the woman whose story it depicts is not yet out of like the prison system. So I feel like it's still very relevant. So people might have a chance to see it again, but yeah. Very exciting Broadway debut for Becca Blackwell, and just excited that this show had that kind of platform too. It was it was great to see it in a huge Broadway theater.
Yeah. It's so exciting that people we've had on the show are now in shows that we can go see or like, yeah, it's very exciting.
So great. I know. They're doing the thing they want to do. It makes me so happy.
Yeah.
So, today's action of the ep is to learn more about. So this is inspired by Holly and I's trip yesterday to the Bureau of General Services Queer Division, which is probably the best bookstore in the city. Just kind of go ahead and say
it's
that.
It's the only queer bookstore in New York City. I would say Blue Stockings kind of is, but I think it's more of like a feminist bookstore. But yeah.
Yeah. If you're really looking for like the full range of queer literature, like they got it there for you. But the center also has their own advocacy platform. It's called Rise Out, the People's Platform.
So Rise Out is a statewide advocacy initiative in collaboration with community leaders across New York State, fighting to advance equity and inclusion for transgender and gender nonconforming people, increase access to mental health services, promote restorative justice principles, ensure LGBTQ visibility, and affirmation and demand economic justice.
So there are multiple ways to be a part of Rise Out, so you can take one of the following steps today.
You can contact your representatives using their form and script to demand representation for LGBTQ New Yorkers.
You can sign up for the Mobile Advocacy Network to stay up to date on ways that you can help the mission of Rise Out.
Volunteer with the action team to help train others in advocacy skills and plan advocacy campaigns.
And you can check out the Advocacy Bootcamp. It's an online resource guide to grow and refine your skills as an activist.
So you can find out more by visiting gaycenter.org/advocacy. And I'd say while we're on hiatus, keep looking for your own action of the eps. You know, there's a lot of things that need to be acted upon in our world right now.
Yeah, and share them with us so we can message it out to everyone.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUPS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUPS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUPSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
So I'm so excited that this week we are talking to Cecilia Gentile. She is such a badass, and I can't wait to share this interview.
Cecilia Gentile is an advocate, organizer, and storyteller working at the intersections of sex work, immigrant rights, incarceration issues, and trans liberation. Originally from Argentina, Cecilia comes to the United States and survived for 10 years as an undocumented immigrant, gaining a living through sex work. She has years of experience working in direct services with organizations like the LGBT Center and Apicha Community Health Center, which led to her moving into policy work, becoming the director of policy at GMHC before creating Trans Equity Consulting to advocate directly for better policy for trans people at the local, state, and federal level. Cecilia is also a founding member of Decrim NY, a coalition working towards the decriminalization, decarceration, and destigmatization of people in the sex trade. Hi, Cecilia. Thank you so much for being here. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, I am so happy to be here with you all, and thank you for having me.
Of course, we are so excited to have you on with us. And we usually start with guests having to share their name, their pronouns, and whatever you want to share about how you identify.
Yes, my name is Cecilia. My name is Cecilia Maria Gentile. I usually don't share my middle name, but I think I feel empowered to do that. Cecilia Maria Gentile. I use gender pronouns she and her. And, you know, identity is complicated. I've been, like, you know, trying to question myself and thinking about, like, who am I in terms of identity? So, you know, I'm so many things that form, like, who I am. I think I always have, like, this, you know, kind of internal fight in between, like, what should I go first, a woman or a trans person or an immigrant? So I'll say I'm a trans feminine immigrant. Those are the ones, the parts of my identity that define me the most. I am a former sex worker. That also makes my identity a very specific one. I am a person who is in recovery. I don't know if we should call it recovery. I just haven't used most of the drugs that I had issues with for about 10 years. So I don't want to say that I'm in recovery because all the people who are in specific forms of recovery may question it. But that forms who I am too. I am a survivor of sexual violence, and that forms a lot of who I am. That's who I am.
Thank you so much for sharing all of that and the many facets that make you who you are. And speaking of who you are, we want to talk a little bit about your autobiographical work. So your one-person show, The Knife Cuts Both Ways, you performed it a few times pre-pandemic. Can you tell us more about the show? And hopefully, will there be a chance to see it or something else you're working on soon?
Yes. I think the show has been one of the most empowering process that I have experienced as an adult. I have tried to be involved in the artistic spheres always, since I was a child. I went to music school, I started doing theater. But as a queer person, those spaces were not really available for me. It was hard for me to play characters that were like boys when I was like a young person. It just didn't make sense. And it translated as if I was not a good actor. Mm-hmm. And in reality, it was that they were not good characters for me to play, right? Mm-hmm. So, I went to music school. And then when I started my transition, it was not an opportunity to do both, right? Be trans and a person in the music world. Mm-hmm. So I always had, grudges a little bit with the artistic world and with the academic world because, I didn't feel like I could belong to those places. And artistic forms have historically followed an academic point of view. Mm-hmm. So the show was a great opportunity to just show my artistic self, and it became out of nowhere. It became an actual thing out of nowhere. It's not like I sat in a place and said, I'm gonna create a show, Mm-hmm. One time I was asked to do a story in a storytelling show, and somebody had to explain to me what storytelling was, and I was like, oh, this thing that I do is art. And I told a story. I remember I told a story with Janet Mock, and I was like, wait, I'm sharing the stage with Janet Mock? What the fuck is going on here, And I told a story, and the people loved it. People loved it. And from then, other people started asking me to tell other stories. A very good friend of mine, sometimes they refer to them as my children. I have issues with motherhood, so I don't call them my children, but they can call me their mom if they want to. I just don't call them my children. her name is Serena Jara. She's an amazing photographer. So she decided to do her thesis finishing school of her photography art degree based on some of those stories that IU tell, and that she took many photographs trying to not recreate, but I guess inspire her, those stories to inspire the photographs.
Yeah.
So it became this thing where it was like photographs and my stories. And it was kind of like, it became this thing where it was like, this could be something that could look like a visual product. So the people from, it's a small theater in downtown. They offered me a residency to develop a show. So I started trying my stories in a small scenario that they have in a cafe concert kind of like situation. So then it became a show, and Serena incorporated those pictures, and Gogo Graham did put my clothes together, and another friend styled me, and it became a product, and that became the knife cut both ways, and the name comes from a quote from Mami Dearest when she says the sword cut both ways.
Love that. It sounds like such a beautiful collaborative project with people who you know and care about. Can you talk to us a little more about your process? You said you didn't like sit down to write this. So was it mostly just out of stories that you've been telling?
It's not written. It's not written anywhere. We were trying to apply for a grant. And in order to get the grant, you had to show the manuscript or the scripts of your show. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, we don't have one. Right?
Uh-huh.
So we couldn't apply for it, which is fine, you know. But that's a lot. That talks a lot about the kind of like classist academic side of the art form at times.
Definitely.
Right?
Yeah.
And how, things have to be in a certain way to be considered, even for something like a grant. I have no grudges against it. It's just, it didn't happen, and it's fine. But the show is a series of stories that live in my head, and that they're slightly different all the time, but they are the same. They're the same, but sometimes they lack details or they have extra details. They usually do have a line and a beginning, a medium, and an end. But they always sound different. They always have different feelings that are most likely how I feel that day telling those stories. So there are real stories. Some of the stories are, all of the stories are through events that are not articulated chronologically. Some parts of the stories didn't happen in that chronological way, how I say, I put them out. Some details that happen not in the story that I'm telling, I incorporate them because I think it makes the story funnier. And some of the stories are a little bit embellished, and some of the stories are what I wanted them to be instead of what they were. And that's for me to decide, right? So that's the beauty of it, just creating something that maybe is not how it happened, is how I want it to happen. And that has a certain level of beauty. So those stories are basically the result of my immigration case. I had a very hard immigration case. I was arrested and sent to Rikers Island. From Rikers Island, I was picked up by ICE, and I was put in the deportation procedures. And I think this is the only time in which I've been trans actually work in my favor. Because I was trans, they couldn't house me with, you know, how they house you in jails are very binary places. Mm-hmm. And I was not safe in any of the ends of the spectrum of gender as they see it. So they let me out with an ankle bracelet, and I went to treatment, and I applied for an asylum, and the asylum was really hard. It was really hard on me. You know, lawyers lack a lot of sensitivity at times. Just like telling like stories to support my immigration case, which was going to be something good, right? And, you know, your asylum would be something great. But the process was, like, really intense, right? Because you have to, like, you know, lawyers don't want to hear, like, the beauty of, you know, your childhood. They want to hear all the trauma, you know, mm-hmm. because they have to make a case of, like, why you should stay here. Mm-hmm. So it was very traumatic for me. So as a result is that I started putting in my head together some stories that made me happy about my childhood and my life in Argentina. And I started telling those stories to people, and people liked it. And Serena decided to do the pictures and all the things that I told you before. That's how the process of this show came about. It was it was the result of a traumatic, reliving traumatic event. It was some kind of like, I need to find something that is beautiful about my my childhood and teenager years and young adulthood to remember that the life was also beautiful, right? That's not who I am. I don't want to be reduced to this ball of trauma, you know? Mm. So as a trans person, like, you know, that was in my asylum, but as a trans person, I feel like every time I'm invited to speak in spaces, people kind of like in a very morbid way, people want trans people to talk about their trauma. I don't know. I think somehow cis people sometimes feel better about themselves when they know that trans people have a hard time with things that they don't. I don't know. So I think like sharing so much trauma through my asylum case and in general needed this show for me to say, like, it is beauty in my life. It is fun in my life. It is good moments. It is good people in my life too. Mm-hmm. And even of people who were not good to me at a time, they were also great to me at some times. And those things, you know, I'm not going to define them by any of those two ends of their, how they behave with me or around me. So this show came to remind me that I am not just my trauma, and I am not just a bunch of terrible events.
So empowering, like flipping the script and just... Also, the non-binary way of telling your story, too, is just so inspiring.
Yeah. So we need so many more like trans and queer joy pieces in the world. So thank you for creating that for us too.
Yeah. Never enough. And, like also how cool being an audience member knowing that because it's unscripted, right? It lives outside of these arbitrary rules we make for theater, that they really are getting that like once ever experience of hearing your stories. And yeah, so thank you for doing that too. That's so incredible. And I think that takes a level of bravery that a lot of performers are probably just, you know, not ready for, to be that raw.
Every time I'm about to come out, I decide right before what my first sentence is going to be.
Wow.
And that kind of dictates how the show is going to go, you know. And as I said, it has a structure in my head, but it fluctuates. And people who have seen it different times get different vibes and different feelings about it. So, yeah.
Awesome. I can't believe that you have capacity to hold all those stories and like from what I've seen, just tell them in such a hilarious and heartfelt way that it always like makes everyone die in laughter. It's great. so talented. Amazing. Can you tell us about your experience working on Pose? And it's such an incredible and historic cast and creative team. What was that like?
It's hard to describe the level of joy that I experienced doing that work. It's, I would say, you know, it's unparalleled. I think it would be hard for me to top that kind of joy, you know, from all the series. Like, you know, I auditioned for it, you know, I saw some of the people that were auditioning for the same role and I was like, I'm not getting this, you know. It was like, actually, I think it was my first audition. Yeah, it was my first audition, the first time that I auditioned for anything.
Oh my gosh.
It was the first time that I auditioned for anything. It was January and it was, how do you call it? Those big storms, snowstorm, nor'easter?
Yeah.
It was a nor'easter. I was working and they let us, they said to just go home because the storm is going to get really bad. And I was like, I should go home. I'm not going to go to this audition. And then the audition was on the way to the train. So I was like, I'm just going to stop here. And, and I auditioned and I was like, I'm not getting this. And, you know, usually, you know, the person who now is like my agent was like, if they don't call you back in a week, it's like you didn't get it. Mm-hmm. And they didn't call me back for like a month and a half.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I definitely didn't get it. I was like, these other people who were auditioned, they're amazing. So they're going to be fine. And then they called me and they said that if I wanted the role, I could get it. And as a trans person, and I think like, it's not really unusual for me to perform, to navigate life, making it look like I know what I'm doing. You know, mm-hmm. I went to a set and I was never in a set before. You know, I was never in an audition before. Nobody trained me on how to audition. Nobody trained me on how to be in front of a camera. But I just went there and I act as if, you know, and I did that with every job that I, you know, outside sex work, you know, when I applied for jobs, I went to places and I pretend that I knew what I was doing, you know, and that's what I did with Pose. I just went there and like, I never been in front of a camera before.
Wow.
So,
wow. Yeah. You can't tell.
It was,
yeah.
It was such a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful moment. The three seasons were like pure joy. But what I will remember the most and will lives in my mind is when we finish butterfly cocoon, that is when I take care of the body. It was like 3 a.m. We started working at 7 a.m. We were like very tired.
Yeah.
Dominique had a terrible cold or flu or something. We were like just exhausted. And when they wrapped, Janet Mock came to us and she said that we just did an episode in a TV show played by 3 trans women of color, written by a trans woman, and directed by a Black trans woman. And it kind of like sink. It was like, oh, fuck. Like, mm-hmm. This is like, this. I'm being part of something that is incredible. So I will always remember that moment when she said that. It was like, it's worth it to spend like this like incredible amount of hours, you know, with this wig and these fucking nails and all of that. So it was so empowering. It was beautiful. I loved every moment of it.
And what was it like for you when the show gained such like a wide audience, even beyond the queer community? What do you hope that folks, queer folks and non-queer folks, take away from the show?
I think it was very important for me, and let me see how it doesn't come across as a trashing anybody. I think everybody in the show was a folks in the younger side, in the, you know, more skinny side, more model-esque side, and younger, more in the acceptable idea of beauty side. And I love that my character was none of that, and it was not an effort to make her look like beautiful or young or skinny or like, you know, she was who she was, and she was also a person who, you know, who's, you know, the things that she did could be questioned, right? And that's fine. And she was, you know, a woman trying to make it, you know, a woman trying to make it and doing whatever she had to do to survive in life, which is, says so much about my own experience. I feel like, you know, it is like, you know, as I said before, like people want to hear the pain of our lives, or people want to have like an elevated idea of trans people. And, you know, sometimes we can be as full of shit as anybody else, you know? So I love that. I think that, the, you know, all the characters were so real. But I think that my character was like, was so close to, I knew that person, you know? I knew Miss Orlando. I hang out with Miss Orlando before, you know? So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing those stories. It's, I got goosebumps.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. And I remember, see, this was like way pre-pandemic, several years ago. I saw you portray, Sylvia Rivera in Oh Earth. And, you know, as one of the current leaders of the LGBTQ community, like, what do you hope to give future generations like Sylvia gave us?
I would not there to put myself anywhere close to the level of I iconic status that Silvia has. So I think, you know, from what my identity brings to the conversation is an extra level of intersectionality. That is the fact of like me being a person who was undocumented in this country for 10 years and a person who was able to navigate the immigration system of this country with all its terribleness. And survive it. So I think what I want to translate and maybe help create a sense of awareness is about the beauty of the undocumented community, the resilience of the undocumented community, the importance of sharing our experiences as people who were who are or have a history of being undocumented in this country, and all its intersections with life. So that's what I want to, I guess, offer as someone who is somehow involved in activism.
This is a perfect segue into our next question. And you're so involved with your activism, but also in creating your art. How do you balance that? And how do the two inform each other?
I think that everything that I do that has like an artistic part or an artistic side is an act of revolution, right? Just the fact that, you know, it's a trans woman with my history is on TV, a trans woman with my history is in a stage, you know, that someone, you know, writes a character for me, you know, it's a revolutionary act. So, you know, when I do work as an actress or as a storyteller, I think on its own, you know, it's an act of revolution, and I don't make efforts to add anything to it. I just let it be as it is. So yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you. And you started the Trans Equity Consulting organization a couple years ago. And can you tell us more about what kind of work you're doing there?
Yes. Well, I was, it's a complicated narrative because, you know, I owe so much to nonprofits. You know, my career became, you know, I started with an internship at the LGBT Center. I went to work at APICHE as a peer navigator. I became the coordinator of their clinic. I moved to policy at GMAC. So, you know, I grew so much in the nonprofit world that, you know, I pretty much am where I am because of, you know, they gave me an opportunity. At the same time, it's a little bit of resentment towards nonprofits because, you know, they're very specific spaces. And, you know, And I just, I'm a resentful person, I guess. Resentment comes naturally to me.
As someone who also, who currently works in a nonprofit, I totally understand the resentment, so.
I'm glad. So, you know, I was like, I want to create a space. I want to create the perfect space where I want to work. And that was not, it didn't live anywhere in a nonprofit or in a corporation or any, or definitely not in government. So I wanted to create a space where I would be happy working, and I had to create it myself. And that's why I started this company. And now we are 11 people working together, and I am the leader. I always say that they don't work for me, they work with me. But I also am the leader. You know, I lead this company, and we work with, we try to help entities to be as beautiful and empowering as we are. So we work with government, we work with nonprofits, we work with corporations, trying to create a sense of gender equity that is intersectional and is comprehensive of gender identity. I think, like, you know, most of spaces, every time you think about, like, gender equity, you know, what comes to mind is a cisgender woman, right? Mm-hmm. And I think, like, you know, it is important to elevate the idea of gender equity to trans people and people of different experience in terms of gender identity. So that's what we do. And we are making a living with that. And that's really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah,
very cool.
I was just going to say congratulations for getting out of the nonprofit industrial complex.
Yeah. I work with many nonprofits now. So, many nonprofits are my clients now. So we are, I think that's really cool because, like, you know, I'm also trying to help nonprofits not be as toxic as they be, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
And it's on your terms too, which is great. Yeah. So have you worked with any theaters or arts organizations?
I am working now with a marching band. Yes. And we are going to change that name.
Oh, great.
Yes. That's so much fun. Yeah.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. What do you think the theater community could take from the work that you do?
I think, you know, the theater community is really changing. I think it's taking more time that I wish they would be taking. But I do see an opening to different experiences. So, you know, I think it is going where it has to go. I still think that it is, it is a lot of class and academic history in the theater community that is not beneficial. Let's put it that way. It's not beneficial to an artist who doesn't have that kind of upbringing, right? I think that it is much more space for the theater community to play with and investigate ways of creating products that are beyond academic conceptions.
Theater is such a product. It is such a, like, a commercial thing, even the non-commercial spaces. And then do you have any advice for younger folks or not so young folks who are trying to do more advocacy and activism work to get out there and do more?
Oh, I think just do it. You know, if you have an opportunity to, I think it's such a beautiful opportunity. You know, I grew up in a dictatorship, you know, I know how it feels not to have a voice. I think that folks that did not experience that kind of oppression don't fully understand the importance of having a voice, right? And so, you know, in a dictatorship, you know, the two targets of every oppressive systems are artists and queer people, mm-hmm. right? So those are, you know, the most important targets of any oppressive system. And that says a lot, right? So for people who are queer and they're activists and they're or they're queer and they are artists, we hold so much power in our narratives, right? That it creates a wonderful opportunity to shape our present and the future. I invite everybody to investigate how they can, you know, you don't have to be an official activist or an official artist to create the things that you can in order to shape, you know, society. You know, in my country, you know, I grew up learning, you know, of the resiliency that comes from the artistic form, you know, and, you know, songs that, you know, we didn't know had a meaning that was so much deeper than the words of the song, you know, when you know that having to manipulate art to come across with a message is such a beautiful process.
Thank you for that advice, and that's, yeah, just sharing your story, it can be powerful, so thank you for that. Moving on to the next section that we call Queering the Canon. So we take stories that we know and imagine how they would be in a queer way. So is there a play or a musical that you would like to see performed or reimagined with trans actors or trans characters?
It is a play that is a very known and popular in the Spanish, Hispanic, Latinx, I guess. No, Hispanic. I think it's not Latinx, it's Hispanic community called La Casa de Bernarda Alba, which is a story of a mother with many, many daughters. And I dream with doing La Casa de Bernarda Alba with all trans actresses.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah, you got to do it. Yeah. That would be great.
I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. But I also think that, you know, so many of the characters that we see in theater or in TV don't need to be cis.
Yeah.
It's not a necessity mm-hmm. for like 98% of the characters that we see in theater on TV do not need to be cis. They are just cis because, you know.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. You know, it's like, you know, my friend Jess Barbagallo wrote a character for one of his plays that was for me, and, you know, the character was a nurse. It was a nurse. It was not mentioned if she was trans or cis or like, mm-hmm. you know, it was a nurse. Yeah. I was navigating a situation as a nurse. The meat of the character was being a nurse. And, you know, it was like such a wonderful opportunity to just say, like, you know, I'm a person who's acting and it's, you know, putting my experiences into a character who is a nurse, but is not conceived to be a trans person. You know, it's conceived to be a nurse. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's such a beautiful opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Because there are trans people who are nurses too.
Correct.
And then outside of theater, this is our queer culture rec. Do you have like a queer culture indulgence? It's like a book or a movie or an event, something like that.
I can watch Dangerous Liaisons like all day long. And I think that movie is so fucking queer. Glenn Close coming down of that carriage with that hat and looking up. It's so fucking queer. I can watch, and I am such a crush on John Malkovich, young John Malkovich, old John Malkovich. I have a crush on John Malkovich.
I haven't seen that in a long time. I'll have to revisit.
Yeah. Oh, maybe. God. When she comes down the carriage and you see her hat, and then, you know, you see her face changing from, like, you know, hating everything to being totally fake, and she's like, it's my favorite scene in life.
Oh, now, yeah, we're gonna rewatch it, Holly, and we'll think of you, Cecilia, during the hat moment. That's so great. And then almost to the end here, one of our last sections is Queer Gives. So we like to shout out a person, a mutual aid fund, an organization, anyone who you think is doing great work in the queer community. It could be your own organization that you would like our listeners to learn more about and support.
I am absolutely in awe of the work that my sister Toni Michelle Williams is doing in Atlanta. Her organization is called Solutions Not Punishment, and they are badass. And also folks of Brave Space Alliance in Chicago are amazing to St. James Infirmary in San Francisco, amazing work and they do to people like Colin Lore here in the city, you know.
Yeah.
So cool to be able to have a clinic for sex workers, you know.
Mm.
Amazing. So yeah, I can keep going and going and going. So I'm going to stop.
Thank you. That was great. Yeah. And finally, how can folks follow you online?
My business is Transgender Equity Consulting, and you can find it at transequityconsulting.com. Social media, I am Cecilia Gentili. In Facebook, Cecilia Gentili 72, in Instagram, and Cecilia Gentili in Twitter. And I do not have TikTok because I refuse to make an effort to be young and relevant.
That's going to be my line when people are like, why aren't you on TikTok? I refuse to be young and relevant. That's great.
Well, thank you so much for spending time with us today. It was such an honor to speak with you. And thank you for all the work that you're doing.
No, thank you for having me. It's been so much fun, and I appreciate you all putting the voices of people like me out there. So thank you for doing this work. And it was so much fun to hang out with both of you.
Thank you for listening to our last episode of season 2.
We will be on hiatus until spring 2022, but our DMs are open.
Keep us up to date on shows to see, actions to help uplift our community, and your queer culture recs.
See you soon, queers.
Happy holidays.
Today's action of the ep is to learn more about, well, this was inspired by Holly and I's trip to the center's bookstore yesterday. The Bureau of General
Services Queer Studies. Division. Services.
I was going to say studies.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.